And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, when I said to you last week, well, I'll see you next week, I never thought that next week would be a week in which the entire political environment would change, would have been changed. But this week, five activist judges, conservatives, reactionary, five, have totally upended politics in America, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
Chickens have come home to roost. The Federalist Society celebrates 40 years of unremitting pressure to rewrite the Constitution. And that's where we are today, with the three or four staggering, horrible, anti-human decisions. Of course, Roe versus Wade, that gets all the publicity. But the other three, I think, are as bad individually as Roe versus Wade, and taken collectively, it's really a body blow to the well-being of the American people.
Particularly women.
Well, everybody. Everybody. I mean, in one case said the world, the government that we know since the New Deal is unconstitutional. And if you follow the reasoning, there's no reason for two-thirds of the cabinet posts to continue, and there's no way for the administrative agencies to function. It's exactly what Bannon's been calling for. That's one case. Another case strikes the end, first of all, eliminates, if you follow the reasoning, the separation of church and state. And if you go a step further with it, it ends public education in America. Two cases. Now, then you have Roe versus Wade. Martin Luther King may have said the arc of history bends toward justice, but this time it bent the other way. This is not justice. This is injustice. Well, I mean, what are we going to do about this?
Well, presuming there is something that can be done, at least in the short run.
I don't think in the short run anything can be done. I think the problem.
Yeah, for years I've been talking about the fact of my analysis of the Lewis Powell memo for conservative action and to counter what he saw as the liberalism of the 60s, including the Warren Court. And I've broken it down into really four rules. And the first rule is to think long term. And these folks have been working long term. Roe versus Wade, it's been 50 years, and the repeal has been 50 years in the making. And, you know, as you mentioned, as far as the administrative state, that's been 80 years in the making. They've been trying to get rid of these things.
That's right.
That's one thing. Although it is kind of ironic in that the Roe decision was 7-2, and Lewis Powell was in the majority. And now, 50 years later, his methodology is being used to overturn what he had agreed to. But what really I think is important, what we have to do or have to talk about, is that elections have consequences. I had been preparing a talk when COVID hit. I'd been invited to talk to a women's group, a Democratic women's group, and never got to give that talk about the Supreme Court. And I think I mentioned, but I think it's worthwhile mentioning again. The last Democratic president to nominate a Chief Justice was Harry Truman in 1946. There hasn't been a Chief Justice nominated by a Democrat in over 75 years. The Republicans have until this last appointment by Biden have had they've had 19 appointees, four Democrats on the appointees on the Supreme Court. The Republicans actually had more rejected, or as many rejected as Democrats actually got on the court. And the election that really made, that began this, and really the two elections were the 2000 and the 2020. And in both instances, the popular vote went to the Democrats. But in both instances, we had a Republican president, thanks to the Electoral College. And George W. Bush got to appoint Roberts and Alito. And, of course, Donald Trump completed the coup, so to speak, by appointing Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. Some people would argue with me saying, well, Bush didn't appoint his people till his second term, but if he didn't have a first term, he wouldn't have had a second term.
That's pretty correct.
That follows. So what we have, you know, used to be that the Supreme Court follows the elections, but the elections that they're following are the elections of minority presidents. And when you see the polling, and I don't think the Democrats have done a good enough job of presenting to the American people how much more popular their views are than the Republican views. For instance, we had the decision on guns, but over 80% of the Americans want more done than what the Congress got done this week on guns. We have the abortion issue, and while there is a split in the American public about the right of abortion, the fact of the matter is, when you break it down, the overwhelming polling shows that people did not want Roe versus Wade overturned, that they think in many instances the woman should have a right to abortion, and particularly in cases of a threat to her life, rape, incest, and things like that. And the Republicans have been going all off in the other direction on this, and these members of the Supreme Court. You know, I talked about, you know, rule number one is think long term. Number two, ideas matter. And what happened after the Powell memo came out is we started seeing these think tanks being developed by the right wing, by conservatives, to come up with ideas to influence people's minds. And one of the groups that formed was, as you mentioned, the Federalist Society, which started out in some respects as being a debate society tending towards the right side of the political spectrum, but it evolved over the years into this really ideological, doctrinaire group of rigid and narrow functioning with regard to the Supreme Court. But they developed these ideas.
With a $20 million a year budget.
Yeah, they funded it, right. I used to say that Hillary Clinton was wrong, that it isn't a vast right-wing conspiracy, it was a vast right-wing infrastructure.
Right.
And, of course, infrastructures take money.
Right.
And they've done this. They've created it. They've created this American Legislative Exchange Council, which goes to legislators sometimes even before they take their seats, either when they're running or when they are waiting to be sworn in. And they take them on these retreats, these weekends, and they propagandize them. That takes money as well.
And they're present in every state legislature. Yeah. They pay in every legislature. They put one or another legislators on their payroll.
Right. And then you have a thing called the State Policy Network, does the same thing. And this has been worked on and worked on and worked on for decades. The third thing that I come up with is you've got to control the communications. And, of course, we know that the Republicans are far better at messaging than the Democrats and getting their message out and repeating their message.
I don't know that. Why is that? I mean, after all, the Republicans are constantly saying Hollywood is made up of left-wing Democrats.
Yeah.
If it's really made up of left-wing Democrats, how come the Democrats don't have good messaging? After all, Hollywood, that's what they do.
Because the Republicans see the world in black and white, and the Democrats see the world as a whole spectrum. And as a result, they can't consolidate their thought processes into little sound bites and nuggets. They're always explaining and what have you. That's basically what happens. But I want to, talking about communications, I remember pretty distinctly, it was late in the election campaign. I think it was in October of 2020. And I think it was up in Michigan. And I was watching a Donald Trump speech. And he got up and he talked about the fact that he was going to appoint pro-life members to the Supreme Court. And I thought to myself, wow, that is going to crystallize a lot of his base. And it did. And he delivered. This is one thing that he delivered on.
He delivered everything he said he would deliver. He said he would deliver tax cuts to the rich. He gave it to them.
Yeah. Well, wait. He never delivered better health care at cheaper prices to the rest of us.
Well,
he never delivered an infrastructure.
No, well, but he did you take him seriously for that?
Well, he said he's a great builder. He knew how to build things. But did you take him seriously on anything?
You should have taken him seriously.
Yeah, that was part of the problem. But what I'm interested in now is seeing what the first set of polling is going to be in various races across the country. This year, we're talking about a third of the Senate plus House races, and we're talking about certain gubernatorial races. In Pennsylvania, a second poll came out this week. Last week, there was a poll that had John Fetterman running for Senate up 9 points on Dr. Oz. This week, the AARP had a poll, and he only came up 6 points, but he breached the 50% mark. He hit 50, and that's the key. Once you get to 50, there's about 6% undecided, which is a very small percentage to be undecided at this point. They're not going to break 100% for Oz. So
yeah, if he gets all of them, he doesn't get to.
Yeah, even if he gets 1%,
yeah,
Fetterman goes over the top. The one that we're worried about is Josh Shapiro, who had a 4-point lead or a little under 4-point lead in the Suffolk poll, and this week he only had a 3-point lead in the AARP poll, and a 1-point lead among people over 50 who tend to vote more. On the other hand, he came close to the 50% mark. Again, it's kind of, that there aren't many undecideds in this. And what's worrisome is the fact that Mastriano hasn't had any money. He hasn't spent any money doing ads. Shapiro's been on the air, and he ain't over 50, at 50 or over 50 yet. If Mastriano gets an influx and being close, people aren't going to spend their money on someone they think is a loser. And if they think that he's close, he's going to get a lot of money. He's going to get a lot of money from this guy, Jeffrey Yaz, that we've talked about.
He'll get the money from Yaz, whether he's close or not.
Yeah. Who wants to do away with public education? He wants to fund private schools.
Right. That's exactly what Mastriano wants.
Yeah. He said, I'm not giving it to the, I'm not giving it to the schools, I'm giving it to the people. That's his line.
Yeah.
And Mastriano's, I think, counting on that. But this is what we see because there was that Supreme Court decision this week that said that public money could be used to finance religious schools.
Right.
Now, there was a loophole in this. Of course, you remember what happened in Virginia in the book that we always talk about, Democracy in Chains, where they, rather than integrate their schools, they did away with public schools for a year or two. The kicker in that decision, the main decision, is that there's no requirement for the government to fund any public schools. What that said is, if you fund private schools, you can't discriminate against religious private schools. But there's no requirement that they fund private schools at all. So we'll see what
happens. That's this week.
That's this week.
Wait till next court.
Yeah, I want to see when they start funding Muslim schools. All right?
Yeah, well, that ain't going to happen.
Well, you know, we'll see what happens there. There's also a kicker, though, in the Dobbs decision, the one that overturned Roe versus Wade. And that's this what Clarence Thomas has been trying to do. You know, Alito's first draft that basically was his opinion, the one that was leaked in May, said this is only going to apply to the abortion. Abortion is different than everything else that involves a life. But Clarence Thomas has been this advocate saying, no, this goes way beyond it. There's a thing called substantive due process. He wants to do away with it. And he specifically points to doing away with cases that were decided on the right of privacy for contraception, even among married couples. That was the Griswold case. And doing the Obergefell case about gay marriage. And the case about that did away with the sodomy laws that said gay couples could engage in sexual relations. It's funny, though. The one thing he didn't talk about was doing away with Loving versus Virginia.
Right. Well, he'd have to get divorced, wouldn't he? That's the case that made interracial marriage constitutional.
Constitutional. A privacy right.
Right.
That made it constitutional. And it's really interesting because his wife's name is Virginia, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
We've had all of these things.
I mean, and that's the point, really. The reasoning behind these cases is much more important than the particular decision in the particular case.
Right.
Because the reasoning and the arguments and the hints that the justices throw out, as Thomas says, bring me these kinds of cases, I've got a majority for them. That's what that means.
And the Republicans have been doing this for years.
Yeah.
The Roberts case, the Citizens United case was that. They took it up. They actually expanded that case from its original meeting. They re-argued it a second term in order to do away with the campaign finance laws, basically.
Well, the Roe versus Wade case is exactly the same. The case brought by Mississippi doesn't ask for getting rid of Roe versus Wade. It just asks for the Mississippi law to be said to be legal within Roe versus Wade.
Right. But this infrastructure went to all these state legislatures, and they all had provisions, I think up to 13 of them, at least six clearly, and there are several more, that said if Roe versus Wade is overturned, bingo, automatically we're going to put more draconian restrictions on the right to abortion, or there won't be a right to abortion.
Well, on Friday, the case was decided on Friday morning. By Friday evening, nine states had these trigger laws that already made it totally illegal.
Right. So you ask what can be done, and what we have to see is, you know, we see a lot of young women out moaning and groaning, you know, about this. But they have to turn these people into action. They just can't sit on the sidelines anymore. They say, you know, instead of woe is us, you know, you've got to register as the Democrats and vote Democratic, and you can no longer afford to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You know, that's what has to happen, and I don't know what it will, but I want to see whether this moves.
Well, it's up to the Democrats to do that. I mean, you can't say that the people should do it. It's up to the Democrats to get them to do it. That's why they joined the party. That's why they volunteer to be leaders of that organization. If they just do it because it's a cushy job with a good pay, if they get themselves elected, that's not right. That's not what the job is.
Right. Well, we just, you need to talk about it. You and I were on a phone call this week where some of the Democrats running for seats in Congress.
Matt Cartwright, Susan Wilde, Susan Lee.
Summerlee.
Summerlee, I'm sorry. Summerlee, John Fetterman, they were all on that call.
they're all in that call. Well, Fetterman was there by proxy.
Right.
But one of the things they said is we want to get out and start signing people up. But it's a far cry from saying it and doing it.
Yeah. But this is the call today. I mean, if you don't see it today, you'll never see it.
Right.
If this week didn't do it for you, you know, go fishing. Take up a different hobby.
The Democrats have been hinting about the fact that this was sort of their hidden power. You know, something that was, if Roe was overturned, that they would be able to turn around this what looks like a Republican wave year. And we're going to have to see. We're going to have to see.
Well, everybody said before this that this was a turnout election, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to win people over. You're going to just mobilize who you've already won over. If this doesn't give you the background, the environment, the political, psychological environment to do that, nothing in the world will.
No.
Of course, not every candidate can do it. Henry Cuellar down in Texas, he doesn't benefit from this because he supports Roe versus Wade being abolished.
Right.
So he may have a problem. But now, you know what? I don't think the Democrats need him.
Yeah, Pennsylvania, Doug Mastriano is out there saying he wants, and he's going to have whoever's the governor, they're going to have a Republican legislature.
Right.
It may not be as overwhelmingly Republican, but it's going to be a Republican legislature.
Right.
And he said, I want to sign a law that bans abortion in every case, no exceptions.
Right.
No exceptions. And you're going to see that. What's happened is these Republicans try to outdo each other. Each state tries to outdo the other in how restrictive it could be.
Well, one state's Republican Party, I think, really set the standard, and I support them, in what they want to do. And that's the Texas Republican Party. And they want to secede, and I'm for it. I'm willing to take around a position.
Yeah, they came out with some remarkable things this week in terms of what they wanted to do. Obviously, they thought that it worked so well the last time that we ought to try it again. But that was one of the things that they talked about. And it's tempting. It's tempting.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Joe Biden ought to get on the air and say, hey, if you want to do it, here's the conditions.
Right.
Number one, all United States government facilities come out of Texas. All those Air Force bases and Army bases and the naval stations and NASA, they're all gone the day you do this. Number two, there's no U.S. Border Patrol. You guys got to fund your own. You want to keep immigrants out? That's fine. You gotta fund it. Number three, there's no FEMA for you. You know, when the next hurricane hits Galveston or Houston, bail them out on your own, literally and figuratively, right?
Right.
And you go through this stuff, and you tell them, this is what you want to do. Have at it. Of course, you know, they'll try to figure out a way to get around. They'll say, we'll let every immigrant across the border, but as long as they move in, you know.
Keep moving.
Keep moving, yeah, to Oklahoma and New Mexico and Louisiana. But we'll see. And it's going to be interesting also to see, you know, Ron DeSantis is out there. And he's actually outpolling Trump in New Hampshire by a couple points. He's put in some pretty draconian measures in Florida. I think, though...
Trump is against this Roe versus Wade decision. He says it's going to be bad for the Republicans.
Well, but he's taking credit for it.
Well, yes, of course.
Yeah. So, we have that, and it's, like I said, there's consequences, and a lot of times there's unintended consequences that occur in these things. And so we'll have to see on that. You know, we haven't even mentioned at this point the hearings. that went on this week, what happened there. I mean, there were some additional bombshells that came out. I've got a new guy that I follow, this guy Eric Hirschman. I don't know if you saw him. He's the guy with the big panda thing in the background when he testified. He must have been at his house. And I looked him up.
He's the lawyer who was one of Trump's lawyers, right?
Yeah, yeah. He came from the Krasowitz firm. You remember the Krasowitz was Trump's longtime lawyer. And he led into Jeffrey Clark, something fierce. Of course,
he really did, yeah.
I mean, he had two or three lines at Jeffrey Clark. You know, Clark was an environmental lawyer, and he said, "Look, you know, the only thing you know about environmental rights and election rights are that they both start with E, and I'm not even sure you know those." he said to this, he told this guy, he said to Clark, when Clark told him what he wanted to do, send this letter out and do all this other stuff. And he said to him, you know, congratulations. The first thing you're going to do as attorney general is commit a felony. And he had already told him, he said, you better get yourself a good effing lawyer, because you're really going to need it.
Yeah.
And what Jeffrey Rosen and Donahue talked about, you know, in that meeting where Trump was trying to get rid of Rosen and put in Clark, you know, Rosen's, you know, the Clark was saying, well, I've had a lot of experience in environmental law and complex cases. He has no criminal background. He's never tried a case. He's never been before a grand jury, never worked with the FBI on anything like this. And Rosen said, well, you may be in environmental law, so go back to your lawyer, go back to your office, and we'll call you when there's an oil spill.
Right.
I mean, those were some really good lines. But
you know, there's one interesting thing. Over and over and over again, the commentators and the congressman kept saying that if not for this handful of men who stood against Trump and so forth and so on, what if there were other men there? You know, I was raised, I was constantly told in school, this is a government of laws, not of men. But the whole point here is that this is not a government of laws. This is obviously a government of men.
Well, men have to run the government.
That's the point. That's right. Why it's not good to make a fetish of law. It's good to make a fetish of politics, which is what men and women do.
Yeah.
Law follows that.
Yeah. I just wrote a piece that I'm hoping to get published in the Scranton Times Tribune, and I said that the founders depended on the fact that the people who would run the government would do so in an honorable manner, and what we've seen is that hasn't occurred. I want to say one other thing here.
Quick, we have no more time.
We only have a minute or so left. The Daily Show, a guy named Jordan Klepper, this week went to a rally of Trump in Mississippi, or they ran the thing of it. And if you listen to the people that were there, you know, it's pretty incredible stuff. Some people hadn't been following the hearings. They had no idea. There was two young women who didn't even know what January 6th was. One lady said it was that election day. And the other people...
They're at a Trump rally.
Yeah, they're at a Trump rally. These other people, every excuse in the world to get around what really happened leading up to...
Yeah, didn't he ask one of them, what do you think about what Ivanka Trump said? And the guy says that wasn't her, that was a clone?
Yeah. This is what we're dealing with. This is the base.
This is what you're dealing with, but this is a small percentage of the American people.
But
that's what we got to realize. They're mobilized. Their strength is greater than their numbers because they're organized. It's up to the left and it's up to the center's forces to mobilize. Otherwise, you lose.
That's it.
All right. That's it for today.
And we have a lot to lose.
We have a lot to lose. And by the way, we've already lost a lot. We have to get it back.
Yeah.
It's not first like time, it's up for grabs. We've lost it. We now have to get it back.
You know, it's the first time the Supreme Court has taken a right away. Alito said, well, Plessy versus Ferguson was overturned as bad law. But Plessy versus Ferguson gave people a right. It didn't take people. It didn't take away a right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is a... we'll talk about this more next week.
Yeah. Yeah.
This has great implications. Fantastic, horrible implications.
Yeah.
But also, we can learn a lot, and we should.
Yeah.
See you next week.
See you next week. Have a good week.